Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily that of those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the central coast of California at 464-8295. But hold your calls for the time being. We have with us today Kent Heiner, who's written a book called Without Smoking Gun. And it's the story of the strange death of William Pitzer, Lieutenant Commander William Pitzer. And, of course, the reason why the death is important is because apparently William Pitzer had actually, in one way or another, had gotten some pictures of the true autopsy of President Kennedy, probably not the one done at Bethesda at all, because we know that the body as it arrived at Bethesda was not as the body was when it left Parkland Hospital. How do we know that? Well, because I have an interview with Dr. Crenshaw, who was a resident at the Parkland Hospital back on November 22nd, 1963. And he told me that the way that the wounds were, they obviously came from the front. And, of course, the body, when it left, was in a very elaborate casket. And the body, when it arrived at Bethesda for the autopsy, was simply in a military carrying casket. So something happened in the meantime, and this is what Kent explores in his fascinating book, Without Smoking Gun. Kent, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you happened to write the book?
Okay. I worked full-time as a computer database administrator, and writing is a sort of a hobby of mine. Since 1997, I've been researching and writing on the Kennedy assassination and things that I think are related. And it was a few years ago I put an article on the internet that caught the attention of someone who knew one Colonel Dan Marvin of New York, and I was put in touch with him. Colonel Marvin appeared in 1995 on a History Channel documentary about the Kennedy assassination, so I already knew of him by reputation. Colonel Marvin says that in August of 1965, he was asked to assassinate William Bruce Pitzer at Bethesda Naval Hospital, and he says that he refused that volunteer assignment. It was offered to him, he says, by an agent of the Central Intelligence Agency. He originally had accepted the mission, assuming that it would be overseas, for instance, in Vietnam, where he was due to be traveling in the next few months, but when he found out it was a domestic assignment, that created all kinds of complications that he simply didn't want to deal with. And he says that he'd been told in his special forces training, he was a captain in the special forces at the time, he says that the training included, you know, they were to understand that they would only be used for top secret, you know, not to say illegal missions overseas, and anything that needed to be done domestically of that nature would be handled by the mafia.
And you're really talking about assassinations of people or killing people in cold blood.
Yes.
And, of course, didn't Colonel Marvin say that he had actually been trained by the Special Forces at some sort of an assassination school where they were taught by CIA? And then, of course, Colonel Bogreitz was there teaching the enlisted men these techniques of assassination and murder?
Yes, that's right.
And you talked to, or at least were in contact with Colonel Bogreitz, weren't you, to confirm at least some of that story?
Yes, I'd read a comment he made in the Seattle Times, which is our paper out here. He was interviewed by the Times, and he mentioned that in 1963, at the time President Kennedy was assassinated, he was at Fort Bragg at the Special Warfare School teaching what he referred to bluntly as assassination and terrorism. And since Colonel Marvin arrived at the Special Warfare School only a few months later, I thought I'd try and find out if the two men knew each other. Kreitz didn't seem to remember Marvin, but Marvin did remember Kreitz.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Kent Heiner. We're talking about a book he's written called Without Smoking Gun. And it's the story of the strange death of Lieutenant Commander William Bruce Pitzer. And, of course, most of our listeners have never heard of him. But, of course, if you will look into the background of President Kennedy's assassination and read some of the books written some years ago, you'll find out that apparently Lieutenant Commander Pitzer had actually had something to do with taking pictures of the autopsy of the American president, but probably not the autopsy that was done at Bethesda. In other words, somebody altered the wounds between the time that President Kennedy's body arrived in Washington, D.C., and the time his body was autopsied at Bethesda, Maryland, because they had to convince the American people that the shots all came from behind. The lone gunman theory, it's sort of like, you know, the theory so often, it's the lone bomber, the lone gunman. And yet, of course, all the evidence points to the fact that the shots came from the front. But then if the wound showed came from the front, how would you sell the American people the story that they came from behind? So why don't you pick up the story? Where does William Bruce Pitzer, commander, lieutenant commander, I guess at the time he was just a lieutenant, where does this whole story fit together?
Well, Lieutenant Pitzer at Bethesda Naval Hospital, actually it's the Naval Medical School in 1963, was in charge of the audiovisual department. He worked producing some training films for the Navy and so forth. And of course, it was in 1963 that President Kennedy was assassinated. And it turns out that Kennedy's body was, after it left Parkland Hospital, where he was pronounced dead, it was flown to Washington. And it eventually ended up at Bethesda Naval Hospital for autopsy. And that's where the story really begins.
I'm going to let you hold on to that story for just a minute as we bring our other stations right back with us. Well, Dr. Stan and our guest today, Kent Heiner, and he's talking about, of course, that President Kennedy's body was flown from Parkland Hospital in Dallas to Washington, D.C., where, of course, the autopsy was to be carried out. But, of course, legally, the autopsy should have been done at Parkland Hospital because he was killed in Texas. But, you see, there was no way the government was going to allow an honest autopsy to be carried out. And almost at gunpoint, the Secret Service simply took the body over the objections of the coroner and the sheriff's office and everybody else in Parkland. And, of course, the wounds, according to the doctor I talked to who is at Parkland, and you'll hear that in the volume one of our four tape sets on President Kennedy's assassination, the wounds that they had at Parkland were entirely different than the wounds that appeared when President Kennedy was autopsied at Bethesda School. And that's why this next part of the story that Kent is going to tell you is so important. And if you want to hear my interview with Dr. Crenshaw, who was a young resident, surgical resident at Parkland, that is in our four tapes at the JFK assassination. And it then tends to, more or less, in my mind, corroborate at least part of the story you're going to hear today. So, Kent, pick up the story from there.
Sure. As you mentioned, the witnesses at Parkland Hospital, right, some two dozen of them, all agreed without exception that the president, the wounds they described in the president's body indicated an entry wound in the front of the head and an exit to the rear, which, of course, disagrees completely with what eventually was given to the American people as the theory that Oswald had shot, Lee Harvey Oswald had shot the president from behind. On the other hand, the autopsy report, which supports the government's findings, described wounds which could have been interpreted as an entry from the rear and then an exit sort of from the top of the head. So it becomes very vital to have some kind of of evidence of, you know, photographic evidence, X-ray evidence, to determine, well, what did these wounds actually look like? And this controversy still hasn't been settled. There are a lot of X-rays out there which are believed to be forgeries, photographs as well. So Lieutenant Commander William Bruce Pitzer fits into this story in that one associate of his claims to have seen in Pitzer's possession some still photos in a 16mm film depicting what apparently was the president's autopsy. And this associate of Pitzer's named Dennis David says that these images, you know, agreed more or less with the frontal entry rear exit scenario rather than the other, and at the time the two men were rather surprised by this. They were viewing these materials, David says, in Pitzer's office at the hospital, the Bethesda Naval Hospital, or rather the Naval Medical School, where Pitzer worked and where the president had been autopsied.
Now, this is not too long after the death of the president?
It was within 2 or 3 days. I believe it was a Monday or Tuesday, and the assassination had taken place on a Friday.
And what's so interesting, I've seen interviews with some of the people who were there in Dealey Plaza that day, and when they said, you know, they told the FBI the shots came from the grassy knoll, the FBI said, no, you did not hear what you think you hear. You did not see what you think you saw. The shots came from behind. I want you to understand, the shots came from behind. They said, no, they came from the front. No, they didn't. You're mistaken. And unfortunately, this is the pattern.
Right, and unfortunately, they didn't have the benefit or the misfortune, as you may want to look at it, of viewing the home movie, which was taken of the entire shooting, which shows the president's head being violently thrust backward from the impact of the shot that took his life.
And then, of course, you see Jackie Kennedy clamoring over the back of the seat, trying to reach something that's on the back of the car. And, of course, that was the back of the president's head. She's trying to get the skull that's been blown out. At least, this is what we've heard. Have you looked into that aspect? Have you seen those pictures and wondering what she's doing, what she's reaching for back there?
Yes, that's exactly what she's doing. And a matter of fact, there was another, I believe a bone fragment was found in a grassy area to the rear of, you know, 30 feet to the rear and to the, let's see, that would be to the left of the limousine, which again supports the idea that, you know, the bullet entered from a frontal direction and then, you know, took this bone and cast it to the rear.
Well, of course, then the tragic thing is that Lieutenant Pitzer has pictures of what he saw, but they defy, they put to the lie everything the American people are being told about the lone gunman who just mysteriously is shot down, killed in the Dallas police station there by Jack Ruby, who were told went in and killed Oswald because, of course, he didn't want Jackie Kennedy to have to go through the trauma of a trial, and he'd seen a billboard put up by the John Birch Society, and that's what motivated Jack Ruby to do what he did. Well, of course, that isn't the truth at all, but that was the story the American people were told. So pick up the story from there.
The Jack Ruby story is an interesting story all on its own. As far as the Pitzer case goes, he passed pretty much unknown to the public at large. He died in 1960. My brain is not catching this. It's 1967. I want to say 66. I should be ashamed of myself. I should know this. Anyway, it was 1966.
Oh, no, of course.
I'm sorry. Absolutely certain it's 1966, because it was 14 months after Colonel Marvin said he was asked by the CIA to assassinate Pitzer, which was in August 1965. So this event was noted in the Post, the Washington Post, the local paper there, that it was an unexpected death. It noted Pitzer's occupation, but of course there's no mention of these film or photos, which weren't even rumored to have existed at that time. It wasn't until 1975 when Dennis David made an anonymous interview in the Chicago area and described what he saw as the circumstances, the mysterious circumstances of his friend's death.
And, of course, we've interviewed Dennis David, and that is an exact appraisal of what was done. So, you know, Dennis David confirms the story. And, of course, Colonel Marvin, when he heard that, that Lieutenant Commander Pitzer had been killed, he came forward and said, well, I was asked to kill him, and I would not do it. Perhaps somebody else from the CIA was recruited to carry out the assassination. Wasn't that pretty much the story?
Yes. And there are no other witnesses. There could be no other witnesses in the scenario Colonel Marvin describes. It was a deal where he says he was approached by a single agent and offered the assignment, and no one else was within earshot. Although he says there was another captain that was assigned to go out and speak with the agent at the same time, but they were not within earshot of one another. And Marvin has suspected that this other captain was somehow involved, but the captain was interviewed eventually by the Assassination Records Review Board in the late 1990s and denied that the incident took place. So, one man's word against another's, and you have to sort of decide for yourself, well, where's the truth of the matter?
Well, of course, if he had actually been involved and he'd actually killed Pitzer, would he admit it?
Certainly not.
So basically, what have you learned from your analysis and the study and the interviews and the research you've done? What have you learned about the whole picture and how this fits together?
Well, I learned that a lot of the initial reasons that the Pitzer case came to everyone's attention were invalid, but there are other things since then that have come up that have continued to keep the case interesting. In the 1975 article that Dennis David contributed to, David had incorrectly stated, I guess he'd gotten this through hearsay, that Pitzer was found with a 45 caliber revolver still in his hand, when in fact it was a 38 caliber revolver that was on the floor nearby, and that he had the pistol was found in his, I want to say, left hand, although the wound was in the right side of the head. So the suspicion was, how could he have shot himself in the right side of the head if he were left-handed? Pitzer was in fact right-handed, and the wound was on the right side of the head, so there's no reason to be overly suspicious about that. The other thing that came up many, many years later, a fellow named Gerald Custer told the Assassination Records Review Board in the late 90s that, yes, he'd seen this friend of Dennis David's at the autopsy of President Kennedy taking this film. And of course, so many other details were just so preposterous in Custer's story that it had to be thrown out. But even though Pitzer was not there at the Bethesda autopsy, as has been speculated for so long, we do know that this is the thing that really interested me. I talked to one of the people who'd been with Pitzer on that afternoon, one of his family members. They say at 4:30 in the afternoon, the family was sitting around the dinner table and the phone rang. Then Lieutenant Pitzer got up and answered the phone, hardly said a word or two, picked up his camera and a jacket and left for the evening. Didn't come back until the next day. We can assume that no other business would have occupied anyone in Washington that day other than the death of the president. Yet, again, Pitzer was not seen at the Bethesda autopsy by anyone, period. So we have to ask, where did he go? We also have to ask ourselves, if the body was altered between Parkland Hospital and Bethesda, where was it altered? And the only explanation seems to lie in the half hour between when the presidential party landed in Andrews Air Force Base and when the body finally arrived at Bethesda. Maybe Pitzer was in the same place. Maybe that explains why the pictures that he and Dennis David supposedly saw didn't match the observations in Bethesda, because this was the place where the alterations were taking place. That was the thing that fascinated me the most, is that possibility.
And, of course, the question is, was he taken to Walter Reed Hospital, where they should have done the autopsy? Were the wounds altered at that point? And then, was he transferred to Bethesda? Is that pretty much the thought, at least the possible thought?
Exactly. Walter Reed Army Hospital was the home of the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology, which was really the place of expertise for determining cause of death by gunshot wound as far as the military is concerned. They've also been called on to assist in civilian cases. When Robert Kennedy was shot in Los Angeles in 1968, the coroner there in L.A. decided to call in someone from the AFIP just because they didn't want a repeat of what happened.
Pull that off right there.
Now, most people laugh at the idea that there is or has been a secret society. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who is Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine. But those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like the corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and then we have want to, of course, mention that there is the opportunity to get many of the other items that we carry here at Radio Liberty, and we hope many of you will want to get the four-tape set we have on the Kennedy assassination. The first four-tape set is an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald, not one I did, but a fascinating interview. The interview with Dr. Crenshaw, who was there at the Parkland Hospital, who 25 years later wrote a book about what he saw, was immediately attacked by everyone in the media, vilified by the Journal of the American Medical Association to humiliate him because he was a surgeon. They hoped to destroy his career. And when he sued the American Medical Association, you know what they did? They gave him almost $250,000, saying, well, we knew we were right, but we feared it was better to pay him off than to go through the trial. They didn't want a trial because they didn't want the truth to come out, and they're still concealing today what happened on November 22nd, 1963. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Kent Heiner. His book is entitled The Without Smoking Gun, and it's the story of the death of Lieutenant Commander William Bruce Pitzer. Would you pick up the story from there?
Well, before the break, we were talking about how Pitzer was not in his home on the Friday night of the assassination, but he was presumably working on something related to the Kennedy autopsy. He brought his camera. We talked about how the body was altered, presumably in the Washington area at the same time, and we talked about the speculation that it might have been Walter Reed Army Hospital where this was done, because that was the home of the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology. Around the same time that Lieutenant Pitzer was getting up from the dinner table to leave for work, Thornton Boswell, one of the surgeons who eventually performed the autopsy at Bethesda, got a call and was told that the president's body was being brought there. And he said at the time that it was ridiculous to do the postmortem there at Bethesda because it should have rightfully been done at Walter Reed, the AFIP. Of course, that decision was overridden. The president's body did eventually come to Bethesda, but the question is, did it go to Walter Reed first, where the alterations that were observed in the body may have taken place? This gets back to a possible answer to another question. A lot of the photos that we see of the president apparently were not taken at Bethesda. Harrison Livingstone has looked into this a bit. In 1991, he called a conference of some of the personnel who'd been assisting at the president's Bethesda autopsy, and he had them look at the photographs. And as they sat there looking them over, they started picking out things in the photographs that just didn't fit. They'd done a number of autopsies at the Bethesda morgue, and they said, that's not the Bethesda morgue. There were details in the floor that the flooring didn't look right. They pointed to a telephone that was shown in one of the pictures and said, that doesn't belong there on that wall. They looked at this metal brace that was under the president's head, and they said, we didn't use those at all. We had some kind of chalks that we'd stick under the head. So they began to question whether those photographs, the ones that are publicly available now, were, where were they taken, they're wondering.
And I think there are so many unanswered questions about what really happened that day. Is this a gigantic cover-up? And how have they been able possibly to continue in this all these years? Well, we know that there was another final hearing. I forgot it was a congressional oversight committee, something of the sort. They concluded there were not three, but four shots fired. And they concluded there was a conspiracy and immediately disbanded the congressional committee, almost as if they were all afraid to go any further for what they might find.
Right. That was the House Select Committee on Assassinations that deliberated and investigated in the late 1970s. As a matter of fact, they really did great work, or the investigators of the committee did great work, and they pretty much solved the case. It's just that their findings never made it into the final report. It was really too bad. A really good book on that subject is The Last Investigation by Gayton Fonzie. He was one of the investigators for the committee, and if you want to find out some of the things that the committee found out, I'd recommend it highly.
In fact, we have the book, we've read it, and I remember one of the things he commented on. He said, when he was beginning to investigate the assassination on his own, one of his friends said, you're wasting your time. You will find all sorts of rabbit trails, and every rabbit trail you follow will come to a blind end. And you'll find another rabbit trail, and you'll follow that one. And what they've done is they've created all these issues just to confuse people, and I feel that they've done exactly the same thing with so many other things, whether it be what happened at Oklahoma City, whether it be the downing of TW-800, or whether it would be what happened at Pearl Harbor or what happened on September 11th. Somebody creates our reality. Do you ever have this feeling, Kent, that they're creating all sorts of false leads just to confuse us?
Yes, I do. And in a lot of cases, you have to wonder if these are deliberately false leads or someone's just being really sloppy in trying to cover things up. The thing that is most glaring in my mind is this passport of Muhammad Atta that was found in the street after the World Trade Center attacks.
You mean the one that somehow got out of his pocket? It wasn't actually Otis, but it was somebody else's passport. Got out of the flaming wreckage there in the North Tower, got out of the flaming building, and then drifted gently down to the street, unmarked, not a singe on it, just the most amazing thing. And it was either truly a miraculous act, or it was planted. And if it was planted, who planted it, and why? And nobody wants to ask that question. Same thing happened in Flight 93, at least when that one went down. There was a little singeing on the passport. Everything else was destroyed. The black one of the black boxes we're told survived, but everything else was destroyed. In fact, there wasn't even any records there. But of course, at least not where the plane went down. But one of the passports did survive, so that we'd know who the Islamic hijacker was on board.
Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done: get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. Or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Kent Heiner. His book is Without Smoking Gun. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And, of course, the basic theme of the book is the fact that there are many unanswered questions about the death of Lieutenant Commander William Spitzer. Now, apparently his wife was told by the naval authorities not to discuss her husband's death. What was that story all about?
Right. Mrs. Spitzer hasn't talked to anyone for quite some time about the case, and doesn't have expressed a wish not to be contacted. But back in 1995, Colonel Marvin did have a telephone conversation with her, and he asked her, you know, if had anyone asked her to keep it quiet, and she said yes. There were some officers out at the house, and they told her not to talk about it. And she didn't really go into any more detail about it than that. But if we go back a couple of years earlier to 1991, she contacted a Washington lawyer and started making inquiries about, well, if I were to come forward, would I face any possible penalties, because she was aware that everyone who had been actually present at the autopsy was required to sign a sign orders from their commanding officer not to discuss the case to anyone, period. She was rather apprehensive about it.
Why, you know, would they want everybody to be remain quiet? If there's nothing to conceal, why did they do everything to conceal it? I know, talking to Dr. Crenshaw, who was at Parkland Hospital, he was threatened and told to be quiet, never to reveal what he'd seen, and told if he ever did reveal what he saw there at Parkland Hospital on the 22nd of November, why, of course, he would lose his residency, he had never practiced medicine. So why would they want to intimidate people to keep them quiet if there is nothing to conceal, if there's really not a massive government cover-up? And it would appear that this, to some extent, is what happened with the death of Lieutenant Commander Pitzer. Would that be a fair thing to say?
Right. It does make one think that Pitzer's death is part of this larger issue, which, you know, no one wants to, you know, even the small information, pieces of information that come out, they can be added up by someone who collects them. This may be just one more piece of the larger puzzle.
All right. Well, of course, now, you spent a full year of researching this. You talked to Colonel Bogreitz. And, of course, the only part that he would have played would be training enlisted men in techniques of assassination. Was there anything else you learned from Colonel Bogreitz? I think it's very disquieting to realize that we train our people in special organizations how to kill other people and do it as an assassin would, not in the field of battle, but, of course, surreptitiously.
Well, yeah, especially given the current situation with U.S. policy abroad. If any other country had done something of this nature, we'd label it terrorism, and we'd feel ourselves justified in doing anything within our power to combat it. It's pretty hypocritical. This has been going on for much too long.
Well, I think that most of the people in our military are patriotic people who love America, but they follow blindly what they're told to do. And of course, Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin, who I've interviewed, who was asked to assassinate Lieutenant Commander Pitzer at the time, Lieutenant Bruce Pitzer, of course, was told that he was a bad man, he was going to betray America, he was going to give secrets to the enemy, and under those circumstances, wouldn't he deserve to be killed? And I'm sure if he'd been overseas, why, the Lieutenant Colonel Dan Marvin would have killed him. Because that was his duty. He was a soldier, he was a patriot, he loved America. Unfortunately, sometimes the people who are accused of being traitors are actually the ones who are trying to bring the truth out to the American people. Did you have that feeling at all as you looked into this?
It certainly came to mind. It's hard to dismiss Dennis David's testimony that he saw these still photographs and the film in Pitzer's possession. Dennis David strikes me as a very honest and forthright individual, and over the many years since he first came out with this story, he hasn't really changed any significant aspect of it. And again, Colonel Marvin strikes me in the same way as being a very honest individual, although there are some very small details of his story that are rough spots, you know, but as a whole, I find it very compelling.
Well, I've talked to Dennis David. He told me, of course, he was an enlisted man at the time. He was a very close friend of Lieutenant William Pitzer. But, you know, he told me that he was afraid for many years to come forward and tell what he knew.
Well, yes. I mean, that everyone he knew that had actually been at the autopsy, he was perfectly aware that they'd been called into the commanding officer's office and read the riot act. And, you know, if you ever talk, you're going to prison and you aren't coming out. And it wasn't until the 1970s where the House Select Committee started, you know, calling these people as witnesses and in the process releasing them from those orders and saying, yes, you know, you can talk and we want you to talk about what you saw. So Dennis David had every reason to, you know, apart from the orders that he was given or other people, I don't know if he actually was part of those orders, but, you know, he would additionally fear for his own life just because of the extreme political controversy which had surrounded the president's death, and thinking if he came out with something that rocked the boat, he could be a target as well.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we used to carry a book. It's out of print now, but it's called The that witnesses, or the missing witnesses, and it was the story of approximately, I guess 109 people who'd known something about the assassination in one way or the other, and that all died under very mysterious circumstances. So I could understand why Dennis David might have been very reluctant to come forward. What motivated him to come forward and tell his story later on?
It's interesting that his local paper, the Waukegan, Illinois News Sun, was doing a series on the Kennedy assassination in 1975, and he read some detail that really bothered him, and he called the paper and he said that, you know, such and such isn't right, and whoever's on the end of the phone line said, well, what makes you such an expert in the matter? And Dennis David replied, because I was there, meaning he was at the hospital when the president's body was brought in. So that, of course, got their attention, and he was put in touch with a reporter, and things developed from there.
And, of course, there are so many loose ends to the story, but the Congressional Committee, which was the only way that we'd ever get any real truth, because whenever the government appoints a committee to investigate the government, does anybody honestly think that it is going to come out with anything that's true? The Senate Select Committee that investigated 9-1-1 early really came out with a report that had a great deal of information in it, and if they did such a good job, it was never that... If you read it through, first of all, the government insisted on censoring it. They censored out probably at least a third of the report. Now, how could you have a report to the American people if the very people that may have been complicit in the crime had the ability to censor everything out? And then, of course, so much of the material was not presented to them, actually was withheld in information that I've been able to determine, where government officials lied to keep it from getting into the report, but then the 9-1-1 Commission was just a total fraud. It was essentially appointed by the administration to investigate the administration, and that's what happened with the investigation of the Kennedy assassination, and all of the initial investigations were government investigations appointed by the government to find out what happened and what part the government officials played. It was only the last investigation, the House Select Committee, the really fascinating book. And what was the title of that book again you mentioned?
It was called, I quote, The Last Investigation.
The Last Investigation, it was. And they came up with the idea, the conclusion, there was a conspiracy, there were 4 bullets fired, not 3. We had not gotten the truth. And then I think somebody, of course, got to the congressman, and they immediately disbanded. And that was the last investigation. But nobody's ever said who was really behind the assassination, and nobody dares ask that question, because it could be very hazardous to your health. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Kent Heiner, who, of course, has spent a good deal of time investigating this, writing a fascinating book, which we do carry. And, of course, you can get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. It's called Without Smoking Gun. So what sort of response have you had, Kent, as you've done radio programs and tried to get this story out?
Well, the responses I've gotten, either directly or indirectly from readers, have been positive so far. We've had only one review up till now on Amazon.com, and that was, I'd say, mildly positive. So it's been good. I've really been gratified with the responses so far. You know, we've talked a lot about the alteration of the president's body and the possibility that Pitzer was present where this was taking place. What we haven't talked about yet are some of the coincidences that occurred around the time of Pitzer's death, which relate to those other two topics. You know, it was on the same day that Pitzer was found dead in his office that the Kennedy family agreed through their lawyer to release the autopsy materials that were in their possession, namely, I believe, there was the president's brain preserved in some kind of fluid, which was not coincidentally found missing at around that time. There may have been some x-rays and photographs, tissue samples. Anyway, whatever materials they had, were finally released, coincidental to Pitzer's death, which makes one wonder if there is a possible connection. Did Pitzer have materials that he was still withholding that he and the materials were put out of the picture on the same day the Kennedy family released theirs, and not until then? And that sort of coincidence was brought up by Harrison Livingstone in one of his books. The other thing which hasn't really come to anyone's attention until now, going back to 1980, David Lifton was the first researcher to interview Dennis David and get his name out there, although 5 years earlier Dennis David had been an anonymous source for that newspaper article. Lifton chose not to focus on David's story about Pitzer because it couldn't be corroborated. That was Lifton's choice, and probably not a bad one. He focused on Dennis David's viewing of the casket at various times and supporting Lifton, who's really got to be credited with giving us the body alteration hypothesis and really fleshing it out that the president's body was altered between Parkland and Bethesda. But Lifton's thesis really evolved from an incident that happened 1 week before Pitzer died. He was looking over some materials that had been put out there by other Kennedy researchers and came across an FBI memo that was written by two FBI agents with the president's autopsy. They wrote that surgery was noted on the president's body prior to the autopsy, namely in the head area. So Lifton really seized on that, and what do they mean? There's been surgery on the head before the autopsy. There's no surgery performed at Parkland. And he picked up on this, and he took it to an acquaintance of his at UCLA named Wesley Liebler. Liebler had served on the Warren Commission staff, and for about, I'd say about a year before this time, Lifton and Liebler had been having this dialogue, Liebler mainly supporting the commission's results, although being really cynical about the processes by which they came to those results, and Lifton being the skeptic, if you will. So Lifton brought this to Liebler. Liebler recognized it as something very significant. You know, of course, if the body's been altered before the autopsy, then it's really invalid as medical evidence. So Liebler, according to Lifton, made several phone calls to other former Warren Commission staffers on this Monday, among whom was reportedly Arlen Specter, the senator from Pennsylvania now. Specter was reportedly very distraught by the news that this report had surfaced. And it was on the next day, Tuesday, that Pitzer returned from a trip and said, I'm going to retire. Who knows what prompted that decision, but he was dead by the next Saturday.
And of course, wasn't there some sort of a ladder there in the office, as if somebody might have been going up to get something out of the ceiling? What was that all about?
Oh yes, the ladder. Pitzer, when his body was found, his head was partially under a step ladder. Actually, I think there were two step ladders, one stacked in front of the other. One might suppose that the step ladder was used to get into the fault ceiling above his desk and retrieve whatever secret material he might have kept, if there had been such by that point. He was last seen about an hour, maybe half an hour before the estimated time of death. His hair was somewhat ruffled, and someone noted that he had a quote sloppy appearance. And Colonel Marvin and I have speculated that he may have climbed up this ladder and reached over his head and his shirt tails came out, and then he may have rested the ceiling tile on his head and messed his hair. But that's just speculation. It's hard to tell.
Well, I wonder though how many naval commanders' offices have two step ladders.
Why were they there? You got to ask, what were the step ladders doing there? Or maybe they're put there by somebody else who wanted to try to get the materials before he did.
What about the autopsy on the commander? Was a lieutenant commander? Was that ever available?
It wasn't available for a very long time. I think Pitzer's widow was still trying to get to it as late as 1990. That's just an estimate on my part. It is available by a Freedom of Information Act now. I've seen a copy of it.
Now, this is 25 years, and that they kept it secret or much longer. So
I don't know if the widow Pitzer ever really pursued it before that time. I'm not clear on that, but it is a long time for it to not be seen by anyone outside the Navy.
And of course, you, as you commented, it was extensively investigated by the FBI and by the Navy. There were, what, 100, 150 pages in this report for what we're told is just a simple suicide?
Right, right. At the time, they had no idea whether it was murder or suicide, so they generated a lot of paperwork trying to determine that. They examined a lot of the items found at the scene, revolver, the spent ammunition, the unspent ammunition, a blackboard that got damaged, the slug that was found at the scene, and of course the body itself. They interviewed a number of people, and eventually, on very flimsy evidence, had to conclude that it was a suicide because they had nothing to support the conclusion to the contrary.
All right, fine. Well, our guest today has been Kent Heiner. His book, Without Smoking Gun, fascinating insight into just one of those many dots surrounding the death of President Kennedy and the strange death of so many people who began to look into it. Kent, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Except genocide. And one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dinigan who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America. The fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer because people are going to have to die of something. You might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
This is Dr. Stan here, and let me just comment that we hope that many of you out there in the listening audience might be concerned enough about what's happening, certainly the possibility of some sort of a terrorist attack, or maybe you're concerned about the fluoride in your drinking water. If you are, remember that Radio Liberty does offer the Big Berkey and the Berkey Life water filters, which will remove almost all of the fluoride with special post filters. Now, the Berkey itself doesn't take out the fluoride, but the post filters will, and although they have to be replaced for every 6 months. Why this is an excellent means to take the fluoride out. Remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You can see pictures of the Big Berkey and the Berkey Light on our website at RadioLiberty.com. And, of course, if you get the Berkey through Radio Liberty, you'll get a free four-tape set or a video we produced as a bonus. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've put together a great deal of information on the strange death of President Kennedy. We have two four-tape sets, JFK assassination, the JFK assassination update. The first four-tape set has an interview with Dr. Crenshaw, an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald, two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the Pentagon liaison to the Central Intelligence Agency. And, of course, Dr. Fletcher Prouty, Colonel Prouty, has no question at all the CIA was involved. And then, of course, you'll hear on the second four-tape set my interview with Madeline Duncan Brown, who was the mistress for Lyndon Johnson. And she tells about the meeting that was held the night before the assassination, who attended the meeting when they planned to kill the President of the United States. And then, of course, several other fascinating interviews in that four-tape set. We actually have an excellent book. It's written by the brother of the head of the mafia. It's called Double Cross, and he will tell you why Jack Ruby killed Lee Harvey Oswald. This is written by somebody who knew exactly what the mafia was doing. They were working hand in glove with the CIA. The CIA was doing the murders here in the United States, and the CIA was bringing in the drugs so that the mafia could benefit financially. The double cross was, of course, it appears, at least according to the book, that the CIA actually double crossed the mafia. Can you imagine anything that unfair, that just totally unscrupulous? Well, here in the book, you'll find out about the assassination of President Kennedy from the mafia's point of view, and of course, the death of Lee Harvey Oswald. And then, of course, we have the book, A Sniper Looks at Dealey Plaza, a fascinating book written by Craig Roberts, going into how the president was killed and who actually did the killing on that. And, of course, we have another book called Regicide, supposedly based upon the papers of Mr. Crowley, a high CIA official in charge of black operations. So we have a great deal of information going into the background of the murder of an American president, information that you need to have to understand what's going on today. And then, of course, to understand how they keep us from learning what's going on, we have two books on mind control written by Jim Keith. One is called Mind Control. One is called Mass Control. They're both available, along with all the other items we mentioned, the 2 4-tape sets, certainly the books, The Killer Looks at Dealey Plaza, Double Cross, and, of course, the book Regicide. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If we don't understand what happened to President Kennedy, we can't understand what's going on today. And then, of course, we have a great four-tape set on Pearl Harbor, because if you don't understand what happened at Pearl Harbor and how they were actually able to cover up the truth, you can't understand what's going on today, or why we are going to war with Iran, or why we are going to war with Syria, and why we're doing everything we can to inflame the Islamic world and have them hate America, and why we're doing everything we can to inflame the Americans to have them hate the people of Muslim origin. And this is the way you play the game. After all, you can't have a war unless it's based upon hate. And remember, of course, what Plato wrote in his Republic, and that is, when the tyrant has defeated his enemy by conquest or by treaty, and there's nothing to fear, then he's always out stirring up another enemy so he can rally the people behind him so they'll need a leader. That's what Plato wrote. You can find it in his Republic, and you'll find it in Barthes' Quotations. Very little has changed. Really nothing has changed throughout all the centuries. The same techniques are used over and over again. And how easy it is to mobilize the American people, to manipulate the American people, because the media is controlled. And if you doubt that, you need to get the book, which we carry, called The New Media Monopoly, by Ben Bagdakian, who was the chairman of the Department of Journalism at the University of California in Berkeley for many years. The New Media Monopoly, we carry the seventh edition, points out that 5 mega corporations dominate the media today and determine what you read, hear, see, and ultimately believe. Pray for America, pray for revival, pray for Radio Liberty. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you.